members, please try and stick to that time. I will follow the order that you have in your schedule. And then we will have half an hour for discussion. We will take all questions related to all the three papers at the end in that half an hour. So if you have any questions of any of the three speakers, I request you to write them down. And then you are, giving us your question, please do introduce yourself very briefly for half a second. Your questions. I would appreciate if you could keep your questions short when you present them in the 30 minutes. So we've had a very enlightening first session, introductory session, and I'm sure that this first technical session will live up to that and will set the pace for the discussion over the next 2 days. So we have three speakers. The first speaker will be Dr. Savi Adhu, who is director at XCHR, and he will present his paper on civil society movements in contemporary work, human issues and perspectives. Savi.
Thank you, Dr. Rubina, for introducing. The theme of my paper is Civil Society Movements in Contemporary Goa, Themes, Issues and Perspectives. Due to lack of time, I will not be going into much detail, but it will be there on the slide there, so you can also have a look at it. The first thing is I would like to draw a definition of civil society movement, not so much from actually dictionary definitions that are already existing, but I would like to look at the local movement and from there then look at common characteristics and draw up something. So in a way that would also be the aim of my paper, that I would like to draw a general broad definition, so to say, or a description, if you put it that way, of what a civil society movement in Goa is. Now, if you see that slide there, from the so-called existing definitions of social movement, the key characteristic that comes up is that they are connected to social change. So movements which either bring about social change or oppose social change in some aspect of And social movements have specific goals, formal organization and a degree of continuity. Then the whole aspect of connection with politics. We know that civil society movements are in a way opposed to the state, or at least they bargain with the state. And so therefore, we know that they also enter into political circles, into political channels, and they draw also, they are interest groups, they also draw from the political path. So therefore, as I said, one thing that comes about when we talk of social movement, one thing is of course the dynamism of the movement. So there is a start, there is a process of, you know, through which it goes through the organization, and then in a way also the institutionalization of the movement. And then there is a period where it sort of either it achieves its goal and therefore dies a natural death, or it somehow disbands, probably due to, you know, sometimes there's a lot of conflicting interests within the social movement, and therefore then it sort of dies. Civil society, I think even today that word is a very ambiguous, very controversial term. I have drawn a little bit from a recent editorial article that came in Vidya Jyoti, written by Dr. Rudolf Heredia. So I've just taken a few points from that. Basically, the below part of the slide, that civil society is basically a non-state autonomous sphere. In other words, it's something which is between the family and the state. It's between the kinship system and the political system. And therefore it's influenced by both sides. So very often when we talk of civil society movements, we should not think that these are movements which, you know, are sort of very which are not influenced by other forces and other factors. So civil society, therefore, I would say, is now the social infrastructure on which the political edifice must be built. But at the same time, it also an alert and engaged civil society has to take an anti-establishment stance. And T.K. Uman would say that since any effort to question those in power, that is to protest, is viewed with disdain and suspicion, the analysis of protest as a social phenomenon and its potentiality for change have been neglected. And therefore we find that movement studies in general in India are rather recent, and we don't find many of them. It is still something which is not common, and much more so in Goa. In fact, if you try to, you know, if any of you, there will be some papers, I mean, after me, on movement studies, and you find to get material regarding them is difficult because we do not have many published studies on it. We have to draw a lot from oral sources and from, you know, manuscripts and other things, but not so much from, we don't have many published studies. In fact, in 2008, I published a study on the struggle against SEZs in Goa, and that article which came in Social Action, because of that I also got many invitations for seminars and conferences which were connected with social movements and with SEZs in particular. And the reason was because there was no other detailed study done, at least at that time, on SEZ in Goa. And therefore, when we look back at post-colonial Goan history and try to review and recover 50 years of Goan heritage and culture, there is a tendency to forget or not to regard the study of civil society movement as an important component of the mosaic of Goa 2011. But if we wish to capture frame by frame the rapid changes in post-colonial Goa, then we need to study the origin of such movements, their sources and patterns of recruitment, organizational dynamics, including leadership, their impact upon society, and the process of institutionalization. Now, in a short period of time, I will not be able to go into details of each movement. So what I'll be doing is just looking at themes, broad themes, which emerged from the different civil society movements in Goa, and also look at the issues that are coming from these struggles. I think one broad theme that emerges from civil society movements is that of post-coloniality. On the one hand, we have this painful process of healing the wounds of the Portuguese colonial period. And this is something which is constantly debated. Even today, if you go on the net, you will find so many blogs, so many articles, so many viewpoints regarding whether, you know, the colonial past has been helpful, whether today what we are in, as many would say, the crisis that we are in, the mess that we are in, you know, how good it was in the colonial past, when the Portuguese were here. But I think when I see the civil society movement, in a way they are confronting in their own way this colonial legacy and reconciling it with our, I would say, the wider Indian culture. I wouldn't use the word Indian culture, but Indian cultures, because, you know, we do not have one particular culture in India. So I think this is a part of that process which we find in many of the movements. The movements may be centered over very specific issues. It could be probably means of livelihood. It could be something connected with environment. It could be something connected with indigenous peoples, tribals. But yet in all of these issues, or this broader theme, would come up the theme of post-coloniality. And therefore, Goan social movements or organized non-governmental organizations have been the most visible phase of this revival, namely rediscovering of a distinct Goan identity, comfortable with its past am confident about its future. This is from an article by Constantino Xavier. I will just briefly look at how this theme of post-coloniality plays out in the anti-merger movement. When we talk of the anti-merger movement, that was what we also say the opinion poll, or some would say the referendum, which was in 1967. We find that in a way there is this struggle between, one is, okay, this identity which we got, or this which we drew from the Portuguese culture, and therefore I would say the sort of Indo-Portuguese identity. And at the same time, there was this fear of being submerged in the wider Indian identity. In fact, that's why, if you see the concept note I have, you know, mentioned there, how even today the 1961 event, the historical event, is called differently by different people. Some would call it a liberation, some would call it an annexation by the state of India. So there was this fear, especially in the, you know, the birth pangs of a new state or a new political entity being born after 1961. And then you see that this sort of fear that was there. I will not go too much into details of it, but we do know that in the first general election, the NGP emerged successfully, and their election plan was immediate merger of Goa with the state of Maharashtra. And then the consequent agitation that took place, there were these two camps. You know, you had the merges vis-a-vis the anti-merges. On the one hand, those who supported Marathi and merging with Maharashtra, and on the other hand, you had the ones, you know, supporting Konkani. I'm making it a bit simplistic. It was not so sort of simplistic, but just for the sake of the argument also, and to show how it was polarized. And so therefore you had two contrasting, highly polarized perspectives. And then of course the central government decided to have this referendum. I'll just quote from Wikipedia, which gives it very briefly, or very succinctly, this description. I quote, "The Goa opinion poll was a referendum held in the state of Goa, India on 16 January 1967 to decide the future of the Union Territory of Goa, Daman and Diu within the Indian Union. Although popularly called an opinion poll, it was in fact a referendum, as the results of the poll were binding on the government of India. The referendum offered the people of Goa a choice between continuing as the Union Territory or merging with the state of Maharashtra. It is the only referendum to have been held in independent India. The people of Goa voted against the merger and Goa continued to be a Union Territory." I think the most important thing that comes up, or the issue that I would like to highlight, was that in a way this campaign was an initial attempt by the Goan civil society to deal with the issue of its colonial past. And this in a way was linked with this whole thing of maintaining our own identity, whatever that identity would be, and that of course will be discussed and deliberated a lot today and tomorrow in other papers. The other theme, which is very much linked with the theme of post-coloniality, is of course Goan identity and culture, which already I have spoken about more. But I would like to look at it in the light of the language agitation, the Konkani language agitation. I won't go much into details because we have a whole session on language, and I'm sure those, you know, speakers will be speaking about it. So we find, for example, as I said, the MGP ruled Goa for a long period of time and in a way promoted a sort of Marathi and the whole language that came about of expansion, Maharashtrian expansion, merger with Maharashtra. So these were the type of issues that came about, and therefore we find this sort of an alliance that came about between which was already there between the Saraswat Brahmins along with the Catholic community, but also in the language agitation you got from the Bahujan Samaj, from the non-Brahmin Hindus also joining in, and of course the whole history played out of the language agitation. Interesting to note in that is that the ones who died or were martyred were the Catholics. They were the ones, we have this Florian Wahl, and so these are the ones who were sort of died. And so that whole issue comes about of, whether this was just a language agitation, just a cultural agitation, or much more a political agitation. Because here it was not so much just a cultural identity, but also political identity. Because along with this was linked also the idea of statehood, that Goa would be a state with Konkani as its official language. Okay, due to lack of time, I will just quickly go through this. The other theme that I'm looking at is modernization. And along with the whole process of modernization, many issues come in. The whole aspect of means of livelihood, the environmental and ecological concerns, and the whole aspect of the natural resources that we have, the control over the natural resources, who decides what model of development we follow, how do we utilize our natural resources. Due to lack of time, I'll just highlight one or two in each of them. The first was the fishermen's struggle, the Rapunzel movement. Here it was basically a tussle between on the one hand the traditional fishermen, and on the other hand, due to the process of modernization, especially after 1961, they were given a lot of grants by the government and subsidy, and so they were able to buy trawlers. So the number of trawlers increased, and so therefore the occupational practices of one community threatened the livelihood of another. And so therefore from this, what comes up is that in this movement, it's basically a struggle of a particular section of society that is denied access to natural, non-renewable resources like water, land, forests. And here you have two sort of contrasting viewpoints, conflicting perspectives, you could say, where, what was livelihood for one would in a way impinge on the means of livelihood of the other. Then we also have the Nylon 66 plant, the Tapa DuPont. This was another agitation that came about, basically dealing with the issue of pollution. Here just one point I want to highlight also due to lack of time, that how in a way this movement, which was a local movement, five villages, Savai Vere and those areas, there were five of them, and from there how this movement spread to the whole state, became also connected with the whole national scene and international. Greenpeace was involved in it, and international media came on the scene, and they were, so therefore it was sort of the whole thing, it got widely, and how because of that international pressure also, DuPont, which tried its best to remain here, they put a lot of pressure on the local people, giving them gifts, donations, bribes, so many other ways, pressure on the government. Of course, the government was with them actually, because they also got their own benefits from it. But finally, they were forced to leave the place and go elsewhere. Anti-SEZ agitation. This actually has a lot of points because I have done a lot of work on it. But again, I'll just highlight what was the main issue there. That basically these were nothing but land scams. In a small state like Goa, which has very limited land resources, huge tracts of land being given to these companies. Some of them not even IT companies or industrial companies, but some of them like Radeja and all, they are actually real estate developers. And so this was basically the whole thing. And lot of issues that were raised by the NGO that were agitating. And I think I just put out that success of the movement. And basically this movement became successful because It was a struggle of villages, villages which were being affected, the Verna Plateau, Vetur, those areas where they were this, but at the same time supported by NGOs, and most of them, the NGOs were middle class people, empowered by the use of RTI. So this was extensively used, in this whole agitation. Thousands and thousands of pages of information was processed and got, and this was used very effectively to counter them. And of course also well-attended public meetings and extensive media coverage. And just a sort of rough timeline, this is my last slide, rough timeline for the civil society movement. Now, in a short time I cannot go through all, but as I just put a few, some may be missing there, I know that, because this is something which I have just done sketchily. But what we see is I was also trying to draw a picture of what civil society movements is. Of course, I know the first question many of you may raise is, are these really civil society movements? And the whole aspect of whether what is civil society, that's the other debate. But I think what we do see is that, these are not just local issues, whatever they were dealing. That's why it is these themes, the broad themes of modernization and the effects or the ill effects of the process of modernization, means of livelihood, and this whole aspect of post-coloniality, which is not just specific to Goa, it's specific to the whole of India and many other countries where there were colonial powers. And so that whole aspect of identity, culture, that comes in. Okay. There are, this I'm not going through, but a few questions, issues I felt can be raised when people are doing studies of social movements in Goa. I will not read it, it's just there. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Babu. You were our test case because you sent us these checking emails about time. You're only 1 minute over time.